I'm Alana Roche.
And I'm Dr. Lauren Costine. And welcome to The Consciousness Salon.
The Consciousness Salon is a conversation where I, community activist Alana, meets with psychologist Dr. Lauren to explore current and historical issues in order to disrupt current paradigms and offer restorative tools and practices.
We will be discussing issues ranging from gender parity, misogyny, shadow work, microaggressions, looking at our internalized conscious or unconscious racism. And at the end of the day, how all of this affects how we feel about ourselves and others, and so much more.
Welcome, everyone.
Hi.
How you doing, Lauren?
Good. How are you, Alana?
I'm doing well, thank you. I wanted to just jump right in on this episode because we do have a couple guests. Yes. And it is October still, and it is National Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And with that being said, we have two incredible guests here that we are so lucky to have. They're so wonderful, and Lauren's going to share their bio shortly. But I just wanted to mention that in today's episode, we are going to take a look at domestic violence and the similarities and differences within the LGBTQ and heterosexual community. And of course, include some tools to help you identify if you are in an abusive relationship. That's really necessary.
Right, and the things that you can do if you're ready to do something about it, or if you have people in your life who are affected by this or dealing with it. And we're going to talk about denial and all the good stuff that comes with this horrible situation that many people find themselves in. So with that, let's jump into welcoming our guests. Today, we have two wonderful guests, Renee Sotiel and Mary Jo Godges. Also known as MJ. And I love MJ that you do it with a big capital M and a small J.
You noticed that.
Yeah, I did notice that. And it's important for me to really do those specific things that are important for people, you know, to notice that and make sure you do that. And they are two-time Emmy winner filmmakers and the driving force behind I Remember Nicole, which is a nonprofit project that seeks to empower women who are experiencing domestic violence and help them find their voice.
Yes. Reach out.
Find
yes.
their voice.
And it is. And it's connected to the 25-year anniversary of the death of Nicole Brown Simpson and Ron Goldman, right? So we'll turn it over to you two, please.
Well, Renee, I think this is kind of where it began with you, the awareness, with you covering the trial of the century, right?
Yeah, I just got into Los Angeles from the East Coast and was working at KTLA as a news video journalist and was at the downtown courthouse and the Santa Monica courthouse, you know, every day for the civil trial as well. And, you know, I've covered lots of things over the years, you know, working in news, the Menendez, whatever
wow.
trials you could,
wow,
big stories you could imagine. But this one had stayed with me all these years. And in particular, one time I remember being inside the courthouse and the elevator, it was during a break and the elevator opens and I see the faces of the families there. And I could just really still picture Denise's face, and they just seemed so heartbroken. And I started, you know, just relating to Nicole, and, you know, I have four older sisters, and I saw how she was getting lost in loss as the trial, you know, went on.
Nicole was getting lost.
Nicole's name was getting lost.
Lost in the whole thing.
And Ron as well.
Ron too, yeah.
And so, you know, flash forward, we make documentaries, but this project always stayed on my mind, and we'd actually wrote the chorus all those years ago. And just kind of left it. It was something that was in our mind. Mary Jo's really the musician of the two. And I just said, you know, we really need to pull this out. There's so much still domestic violence going on, and it stayed on my mind, and we wanted to do something. And we decided, instead of doing a full-blown documentary, let's do a song music video to make it less intimidating to talk about domestic violence and empowering. And, you know, we love songs, and we all know where we are when we hear them. And so that's how that came to be there.
That's great. It's really interesting that you made that choice to do a music video versus a documentary, because there's so much controversy around, I'm sure, if you were to do a documentary and where that would lead to. And I think the trial would probably overshadow the intent, which is
to remember Nicole and Ron, right?
Is to really look at this piece around intimate partner
violence,
right? Which I just discovered that term, by the way. Love that term, intimate partner or intimate violence, right? So making that choice to create this narrative in a musical or in a visual way, I think it's really powerful and unique and creative and safe. As you said, it's inviting. It invites a conversation.
Right. Well, that is true, because there's something about a chorus that means a lot of people coming together, and they hear that, strike that common chord, and can sing these songs out and these lyrics. And that's why that's kind of our line there. We're raising awareness while raising the roof. So, you can hear it in kind of a safe way. And I will free myself, believe in myself. I will keep myself safe and whole. This is what I know. I remember Nicole. And we were realizing that, it was actually Nicole's sister that said, well, they're not even talking about my sister anymore. Mm. And that's when, I think you came up with the title, Renee, for I Remember Nicole. And, we realized making this, because we're not versed on this, or have any kind of degrees as far as, domestic violence. But I mean, we were just surprised, because we asked hundreds of people. We went to a bunch of protests, rallies, political events, screenings. Everyone we asked, would you like to be in this video? It's to raise awareness about domestic violence. There was always this sort of visceral reaction, oh my God, yes. And you can just see in their eyes that they're flashing on memories. I mean, we even had a couple people say, I never thought of it before, but I grew up in a domestic violence home. Mm. My mom was this. This happened in our house, and no one ever talked about it, so we didn't think about it until we asked them to hold this sign. So that was kind of a wake-up call for us, realizing it's, not isolated. I mean, even though the trial of the century was a big story, it was also, it woke up a lot of people personally in their own homes, too. It was a personal story, too. And we've realized that the term intimate partner violence is actually kind of transcends into more of the LGBTQ community, especially for police and, professional awareness. It's it's not your traditional male-female marriage that this happens. It's in all kinds of situations and, different partnerships. And it's kind of taboo. It's still in the closet, that's for sure.
100%. I think people don't want to talk about it. It's not a fun conversation. And we're in a world where we want to kind of, a lot of folks want to just highlight what's fun or what's good, or social media is really about highlighting what's good in your life. It's not like you're going to sit there and say, there was violence in my home last night and post that on your social media feeds, right? Because that's actually not a safe place to put it anyway. But the point is, it's really about I had a great time at this party, blah, blah, blah. And so we're definitely dealing with this constant push-pull in the collective of pushing out. We have Domestic Violence Awareness Month, so we can get this opportunity to talk about it. But at the same time, people shut down around it. It's scary. We're not supposed to talk about our families in that way. We're not supposed to tell family secrets. It happens to other people. It doesn't happen to me. But I think it's so powerful what you said, which is when you were out there, boots on the ground, interviewing all these folks for your music video, you'd see that everyone had a story or knew, had some connection to personally to intimate violence in their life somewhere along the way, right?
Yeah, because we shot this documentary style, and even for me, I'm from the East Coast, and I was visiting family, and I shot some there, and I asked my niece what sign she wanted to hold. It's the chorus of the... It's the lyrics of the chorus. And she started telling me for the first time how she was in a domestic violence relationship. And I was like, why didn't you tell us? We're pretty close family. And so after all these years, she was just, telling me, a few years back that this happened to her. And so that's where, it opens up dialogues and, you learn things about yourself and people close to you that you didn't know before. And since it's, you know, it's only a 3.5 minute song, people could listen to it. And, you know, even the younger generation, my other niece who's in high school didn't even know Nicole was a person, but she started talking about, you know, a real person, how, but, you know, her friend was going through violence with her new boyfriend, pushing her around. And so people can still relate to it because we sing a lot of songs with names in it where we don't really know the people.
Metaphor, Nicole. Yeah. So your niece knew of someone that was sort of a metaphor for Nicole. So yes. So it kind of educated her hearing the song, like, oh, that's what my friend's going through. Right. The same thing Nicole went through.
Yes.
Right. So.
Right. And I think it also is to really highlight the family was noticing, the Brown family was noticing, is that in this huge trial of the century, she was getting pushed out. And Ron was getting pushed out. The folks that really suffered and ended up losing their lives here. And so it's, again, also, if tell me if I'm wrong, but it's like, you know, the idea of let's keep bringing awareness to the victims. You know, let's not let them get lost in the sensationalization of some of these stories that are so unbelievable that the people that really are suffering or suffered loss or are the victims get lost in it, you know?
Dr. Lauren,
yes.
You mentioned earlier that today is actually Stop the Stigma Day,
yes.
Which I think is so appropriate for this topic. Could you share with our listeners a little bit about how we can, well, I guess the relationship with what we're discussing today and the stigma around intimate partner violence?
Well, so first of all, Stop the Stigma is to bring awareness and stop the stigma around mental health issues in general, which includes addiction. And obviously, you know, if you're stuck in a domestic violence or intimate partner cycle, there is some, you know, mental health issues there, right? So it all interconnects. And this is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. So it's so great that all of this is happening because we are definitely in a collective movement where people are saying, we need to talk about this. I mean, it was on CBS News this morning. They were, you know, it's everywhere today. It's tweeting everywhere. So it's like, let's stop stigmatizing mental health issues, intimate partner violence, addiction. Like, this is just making it worse. And what they're noticing is that suicide rates are up, addiction rates are up, mental health issue rates are up. There's a number of reasons why, but the point is that people are suffering. And when we repress it and pretend it doesn't exist or stigmatize it so that people are afraid to talk about it, including intimate partner violence, then it just gets perpetuated. It stays in the shadow and continues to create all kinds of suffering and distress and disruption in people's lives and access to happiness and joy. So that's really kind of the connection of today. Yeah.
I'm also curious when it's in the shadow. I mean, if folks and victims of domestic violence is so lucky to exit, what are the chances that they would actually end up attracting another domestic violent dynamic into their lives?
Oh, that's actually a great question. So when you find yourself in this kind of relationship, you know, we've got to do inner work to figure out how it happened and whether it's, you know, sort of family passed down through family. It's something you witnessed or something you were around. You saw it happen to a parent. You know, there was just, you know, a lot of issues in the family that were never discussed. You know, whatever it ends up being that leads you into this situation, it is so important to look at it so you don't keep repeating it. Because you know what? We do repeat behaviors and situations, we can find ourselves in them again if we don't get help around them, if we don't do the inner work to figure out how it happened in the first place. This is not a blame the victim kind of stance. This is a take responsibility. I'm an adult now. I've got to figure out why there's aspects of my life that aren't working. And then I have all the tools. There's so many tools out there today. There's Dr. Google, which, you know, I don't say go out there and diagnose yourself, but there's a lot of good information. And then we're going to have a lot of resources at the end of the show today. We're going to talk about those resources in a little while. So yeah, there's so much that we can do today. And I think removing the stigma, which is what this show is about, and bringing you, Renee and MJ, on and talking about this, is that we've, by talking about it and normalizing it, we're helping remove the stigma. There's nothing wrong. It's not your fault if you end up in an intimate partner violence relationship. There's no one blaming you. Yes, you know, you might feel shame come up about that, but please get help.
Thank you so much, Dr. Lauren. Actually, according to the Bureau of Justice Statistics, National Crime Victimization Survey, for every year, 4,000 victims of domestic violence are killed. I mean, this is, that's the result.
That's huge.
So the stigma, it's life saving.
Yes. Yes. Removing the stigma is life
saving. Removing the stigma.
The stigma itself is deadly.
That's
true. The stigma is deadly. It's why, you know, it's how suicide keeps going. It's how these overdoses keep happening. It's how intimate partner violence continues. Because when you're not talking about it, you're not going to get help. You're not going to figure out how to change the situation or heal, get healed. Yeah.
Awesome.
I'm so glad you guys have this. I subscribe to your podcast. It's raised my consciousness.
Thanks, MJ.
No, but really, it's just, I'm watching you do it now too. Usually it's just, you know, the earbuds, but no, it's just conversation that you got, you talking about it and getting it out there, and for people that need to hear it, or, you know, maybe they feel the stigma, but anyone can subscribe to a podcast and listen to how they, you know, get the tools to, you know, face their awareness and where to go, reach out for help. So, you know, thank you. I'm a fan.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, thanks. Really. Yeah.
Yeah. So, just the fact that you two have been doing this forever, and that your partners, your business partners and your life partners, and we wanted to highlight that because it's so cool. Lesbian visibility as well is also important about the, you know, destigmatizing the homophobia and what I actually call lesbian phobia in the world, which is the combination of homophobia and misogyny. And then women have to have kind of, we carry both of that. Mm-hmm. You know, we carry both of those stigmatizations, right? So it's so great. It's very empowering to have you on the show and with everything that you do.
Oh no, I mean, we're, you know, like we say, we leave what's on the cutting room floor, we leave in the editing room.
The editing room stays in the editing room.
Right.
And sometimes who's ever at the actual council, if I'm there, I'm like, and Mary Jo's behind me, I'm like, I could feel you making those faces and everything, just because I'm not seeing behind, you know.
But we are uninhibited with each other, you know, like, you know, she's not afraid to tell me, nah, that's not a good idea.
Or, right.
You know, but I could tell, like, if she, like, I could see that look in her eye, like, I just said something and she thinks it's a good idea and then I don't remember what it was.
And then she does. That's awesome. That sounds so great.
In the studio, the name calling, or not name calling as much as the...
We direct each other.
Behind the back. Lights,
neither of us takes direction from each other.
That's really great. And you had also mentioned that you had some, what you thought were important stories you'd heard when you're doing your red carpet interviewing some folks that had talked about their story in the LGBTQ queer community that you thought are also powerful.
Well, it's been such a learning thing, because it started, oh, let's write this song, let's raise awareness to reach out for help. And, you know, the video does have the 800 number where you can go, which was not there when Nicole,
that's an important piece too. Yeah. There was no number to call if you were in an intimate partner violent relationship. she just kept calling the police. We have tapes of that, right?
And they didn't even really know
what to do.
And they were just all enamored with OJ. And so, yeah, there was no national domestic outlet or 800 numbers that there are now to call. And so it was a different time. So, you know, people, you know, thinking back and saying, why didn't she leave or why didn't she reach out for help? She did reach out for help in the best way and the only way that was available at that time.
So, she did it often because those are the things that we have. We've all heard those. If you actually, you know, have listened to it, they're there.
But
yeah.
We make documentaries, but we also have, we also cover red carpet events as LGBT Hollywood is our other.
This is how people, a lot of times people won't talk to all the outlets and then we go, hey, we're the official lesbian crew. And I watch their feet because they literally stop. Like, yeah. Who just said that? And they kind of have to come to us then and talk to us.
Well, you know, years ago, we've been covering them for years. And at the time we were the only outlet there. Right. And now over the last like 10 years or so, it's become mainstream. So we're competing against
ABC
Entertainment.
Oh,
so
like before you weren't.
Yeah. We'd be the only ones they'd stop at because we're the only ones there.
Yeah,
and then they're like running by.
Yeah, because
like,
they wouldn't dare. Where were you guys 10 years ago? Nobody was covering this. You wouldn't show up. You know, they didn't. A lot of times people would want to honor somebody and give them an award and they wouldn't. They was like, no, I'm not coming. So we were there on the red carpet and. Not the mainstream was not there. Now it's like, yeah, we've been kind of pushed down the line a little bit. I'm glad they're there. I'm glad they're covering the events, but we're still the official lesbian crew.
And first.
And you should talk to us.
That's
We use that title now, even, you know, we cover the Emmys, even, you know, mainstream events, they invite us to now too. And I think because they're seeing there's a need for, you know, the LGBT.
Well, our voices.
Actors.
Like your voices.
Yeah.
I love listening to you all, too, because these are our voices now that have kind of just not been surfacing yet.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we've always been here.
But we've been completely quiet.
Right.
You know, or silenced or invisible.
Yeah, or they're writing our lines for us.
Yeah, exactly.
So when we interview, when, you know, the red carpet comes down, when, like we've talked to plenty of celebrities. Renee's usually the one that's more articulate about asking. It's such a difficult question for me to ask. Like, how is your? I can't even say it now. Like, what do you say?
What do you say, Renee?
Yeah.
I'll say, you know, in June was 25 years since the murder. So I'll say, do you remember Nicole Brown Simpson? Or if they were young, have you heard of the Trial of the Century? And you know, everyone has. Or I'll, you know, now I'm saying we have a project that raises awareness on domestic violence. Do you have any stories? And even, I don't actually even have to say, do you have any stories? As soon as I say intimate partner violence or domestic violence, you could see a shift in their eyes. And they say that they either grew up in a home like that, or their mother was abused, or even a relationship. And Laverne Cox really went into how in the transgender community, you know, how bad it is.
The relationships, dating is actually, she knows people, I mean, are deadly.
Yeah.
And especially with trans women. So, I mean, she was so articulate where she just explained how this whole thing, you know, it happened to her. So everyone she knows.
Has had some experience.
How dangerous it is to be in a relationship as a trans woman. I mean, you literally take your life into your hands.
Yeah, because in particular, these men can get very violent with them.
Right, because it's verging on that, the dangerous toxicity of that. It could, you know.
Yeah, just what we actually talked about in our last episode was toxic masculinity. And so for our listeners, if you want to go back to episode 18 and kind of, if you didn't listen to it, it's helpful to connect the dots to what we're talking about today.
Right, and the LGBT community didn't really have examples. I mean, it's just been of late that, you know, we're being acknowledged in a marriage equality. So you're growing up and you're not talking about yourself and your feelings and relationships. And you're certainly not going to talk about it if your partner is pushing you around.
No. And Alana and I were talking about that. There was a couple things, you know, we still get blamed for things, you know, like if something happens in our community or something happens to an ally, they'll say, oh, it's because you're supportive of the LGBTQ community. Like, I just saw someone saying, well, Elijah Cummings died early because he was an ally of the LGBTQ community. He got what he deserved, kind of horrible stuff, right? So if we end up having violence within our own community, why are we going to tell the homophobic straight community that we have issues within our own community? They're just going to say, well, you know, it's because you're getting what you deserve, you know, blah, blah, blah. So, and that leads back to, can you tolerate hearing that? That takes a lot of strength and inner work and developing your window of tolerance to be able to hear those things and go, oh, it's them, not me. Like, but if you're in still a place of being sort of fragile or having, you know, a lot of internalized phobias is what we call, what we talk a lot about in the podcast. If you have internalized homophobia, for instance, or internalized transphobia, it's going to be really hard to, like stand up to these kind of accusations or, you know, negative feedback. And it also can be a reason why there's domestic violence in our community as well, is it's like the person who is, and this is just a piece of it because these are very complex reasons why people get like this, but a piece of it can be they have not dealt with their internalized homophobia or transphobia, and then they take it out on their partner as a piece of it.
Right, because they're hurt.
Right.
And this is all they know, that they're less than, they're not worth it. And so it's certainly not our relationship.
Right.
And I can't go to my community leader. I can't go to my church. I can't go to my family. I'm not worth it. So there's probably some self-destruction.
Yes. And there. It's like in those situations when you have that kind of self-hatred because you've internalized the messages from society that you're wrong and you're bad and you're not, you know, lovable. And then you have this self-hatred. Then for some folks, they project it outward and then they take it out on others. Some folks project it inward and take it out on themselves.
Maybe I deserve this.
Right. Yeah. And the inner critic, you know, you deserve it. You know, look, you're not lovable. So, or, you know, you're never going to be loved by anybody else. So stay, you know, those kind of things.
Right. And even, you know, talking about this too, raising our consciousness, right? When people realize it, when you start talking about it, they start remembering. Like that happened to us in real time with Conrad Riccamora. He's on How to Get Away with Murder. He said, you know, now that I think about it, I was in one. And his boyfriend looked at him like so sad. You know, he goes, his new boyfriend. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. No.
Not the one. Boyfriend. Not the one perpetuating Yeah.
But he realized, he goes, you know, he kept slamming me and shoving me, and I was like, wait a minute, this is not what's supposed to happen to me. But it for a while he thought it was.
Yeah, and I think there's so much denial around these kind of things, because if you're in love with somebody and they get violent every once in a while, there's also what we call the cycle of abuse, and we're going to have a link to the diagram of that that I think is really important, because what happens is there is the tension that builds up within the person that is going to enact the violence, right? And then there's the violence act, right? And then after that, there's always what's called the honeymoon period, which is like the repair, and they may come back and they're remorseful and they beg you back and they say they'll never do it again and so on and so forth. And then the tension builds again. And so it's called the cycle. So that's a big piece of why people can get into denial about it as well, is because it's like, oh, they're never going to do this again. I'm going to believe them this time. And I love them so much and they love me. And, you know, and it can take a really long time to realize that that's actually a really toxic, unhealthy relationship.
Yeah, because there's that empathy there. You still have that feeling, but then, you know, boom. And it was cute in a sad way how his boyfriend said, you know, if you know of someone in a relationship like this, don't tell them what to do. Don't tell them to leave. Just say, can I do anything to help? Is there anything I can do?
Nice.
Because it's so easy for us, like, you know, as observers to say, hey, just get out. Just go somewhere. Do something. And it's not that easy. A lot of people, it's dangerous. I mean, even to call to call the police, as soon as or whoever, that's they're going to pay for it. Or
that's
their kids
right.
will, or their pets.
Their pets will.
So
yeah, yeah.
It's
and
not an easy solution.
Yeah, you actually get worried for your pets, because if the violent person knows you love your pet, they might, you know, try to hurt you through your pet.
Yeah.
Or you get worried that they're going to try to hurt you through your pet.
Yeah.
Or your kids, you know. This is... this is very important stuff that you're talking about. And there are more safe houses all the time, right, that are places that someone in this situation can go that are funded, right, by the government, and they can go and they're hidden. It's not like the address is publicized, so you get away from the perpetrator. But it's getting to that point in the first place that is so hard for some people. And as we were talking about, it's a bunch of pieces packed in, but there seems to be some sort of a kind of a love addiction piece to it as well. Like the person can be addicted to the person that's violent to them and vice versa. They're addicted to the person that they keep hitting, you know, the person that they keep getting so angry at and enraged at. So that's another component that I think is really important to unpack when you're looking at this. And I know that also what can happen is if you end up in a situation where you've been calling your friends for a while and saying, he or she did it again, and I'm in this place, and your friends are really empathic for a while, and finally they're like, they know they're powerless. Yeah. And then it gets hard to call your friends, right, Alana? We were talking about that. It's like, can I call them and say it happened one more time when I didn't think it was going to? And you have anything to say about that? No? So anyways, yeah, it's really great that you've been able to get those stories from people within our community that have a platform.
Yeah,
and
just
they
a
are gonna
song. Listen
yeah.
to this song, and maybe it'll kind of give you some fresh air on the situation, shine a little light on the darkness that you're in. You just open like maybe a window, and
we're sharing all the stories too on our sites.
That's
so
great.
You know, they're available for everyone to see, and you know, every time we interview someone about, you know, intimate partner violence, you know, we post it, so you could. It's all over all our social media sites and everything, and on our YouTube channels. So.
I think that's so important what you're doing, because when someone's a fan of a celebrity or an actor that they love because they love the show, and then that person talks truth about mm-hmm. difficult situations in their life, it's going to help them feel more empowered to look at that situation for themselves more directly.
Right.
So,
yeah, our recent one too, we met the cast of Pose, who we love that show. And they all had a story, and they all, you know, participated in our reach to raise awareness. And
yeah.
So we posted that as well. They all said a lyric to our, you know, from our song, and everyone has just been really supportive. And so this project, the idea of it many years ago started out as, you know, honoring Nicole Brown Simpson, which we still do, but it's also, I think it's morphed into us something bigger and, you know, our personal passion to raise awareness on intimate partner violence, especially in the LGBT community, and you know, to do what we can to get people to talk about it, because it's still not talked about it. So
it's so true. That's so great. Well, thank you so much. You have been wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us today and for all the work you're doing out there. You're just incredible activists.
Oh no, it's thank you for what you do. And then like we said, just, you know, it's on YouTube. I remember Nicole.
Okay.
Share it with, you know, for yourself, or if you know someone, just get it out there. It's, I just think it's kind of this whole movement. It's not just a moment, you know.
It's a movement.
So much
exactly.
going on. It's legislatively. I mean, the red flag laws are out there, and Violence Against Women Act has been gutted. So this, you know, it's kind of the personal, but it's also the political.
For sure.
Here.
100%.
So this song is pretty non-threatening. But when you get a chorus of, you know, millions of people singing it, hopefully it can be impactful in more ways than just singing a song.
Right. And we offer it, you know, it's free on YouTube. So if you go to iRememberNicole.com, all the information is there. You know, we're nonprofit. All the social media plugs are there. And, you know, our email, so contact us. It's our passion project. So it's just a small group of volunteers trying to do this. And also if you Google hashtag iRememberNicole, it comes right up. So please watch and share. And this is my call to action. You can't see this, but I have an I Remember Nicole t-shirt on, which I wear every day, which I'm sure you guys know because you see me a lot. And actually, Alana is in our I Remember Nicole
that's
video.
Right.
But
that's
it's my,
how
that's
yay.
How we met her. We said,
yay,
we like
all,
oh, yeah, we did. We said, we look like this cool chick. And we saw her in West Hollywood walking the streets and
doing her thing.
Yeah,
it was right after the vagina monologue.
monologue. Yeah, it was after the vagina monologues, right? And we said, and you're probably thinking, "This is what is this?" Okay, but it's my call, my personal call to action, wearing this shirt, because I could be in the grocery store or anywhere, a construction worker, and a lot of people either say, "Who is Nicole?" and they kind of already know, or "What's it about?" And so many people every day want to talk about it. So that's just my personal thing that I'm doing one person at a time. And
I'm just going to say,
do it too,
so. Oh, sorry. I'm going to say what the shirt says. Hashtag I remember Nicole.
Right. And technically, on YouTube, we have it listed as a global anthem reclaiming power over domestic violence.
Oh, that's great.
That's what it is. So.
Thank you both so much. It's been an honor having you on. Thank you again.
It's been an honor being here.
Yeah, and fun.
Okay, awesome. Yay.
Thanks.
Bye.
Thanks for having us.
Hey, everybody. So we just finished up interviewing Renee and MJ of I Remember Nicole, and you got all the information if you want to get in touch with them or help them with their cause. And now we're going to continue the conversation around domestic violence awareness month and intimate partner abuse and violence. So what we're going to do is we're going to jump into some statistics, just kind of put out there, because we want to keep having this conversation to raise the consciousness and awareness around, you know, this issue that exists and is usually very hidden from ourselves or from you. It may be happening next door to you and you don't know it, that kind of thing. And then we're going to go over some resources and some ways to know if this is happening to you or someone you know. So let's just jump right in, shall we, Alana?
Yes, let's.
Awesome. Now I'm actually going to go over some of these myths that happen around what goes on with intimate partner violence in the straight heterosexual community and the LGBTQ queer community. And so basically, let's just lay this out, shall we? So domestic abuse and violence, also known as intimate partner abuse and violence, is a pattern of behavior in which an intimate partner or former partner attempts to control the thoughts, beliefs, and or actions of his, her, or their partner. And it can include physical, sexual, psychological, and or financial abuse, and it's just as common among same-sex couples as it is among heterosexual couples. I got that off the LA LGBT Center website, everyone. So these are a couple of the myths. Domestic violence is mainly a, quote, straight issue and does not occur often in LGBTQ relationships. Truth. Although many people believe that only straight women can be victims of domestic violence occurs in LGBTQ relationships at similar or higher rates than the general population. And one of the reasons that we were kind of bringing that up with Renee and MJ is a piece of that it's higher rates is because of our trauma, our collective trauma as a community, and our internalized phobias. And as I was mentioning it earlier, it can be externalized, right? So that's a reason why we have higher rates of going to therapy, higher rates of addiction, higher rates of this domestic violence stuff. So this is important component, but it's not, again, to blame us. It's to realize that it's as a result of trauma and oppression and invisibility. And that, you know, raises these problems within our community and with each other. So
beautifully said. Yes. Well done, Lauren.
Thank you, Mom.
Handled over there. Yes, I agree with all of that. It is so complicated. It is complex.
Very, very.
And because of systematic oppression and because of society standards, et cetera, there's so many layers that we're up against as a community and women in general.
Exactly.
So,
and it's all connected.
We did touch on this in our last episode. So.
Right. And we've been touching it along the way with all explaining the different phobias, the, you know, misogyny, sexism,
it's all there.
Misandry, all of it.
But this is an epidemic.
Right. Right.
And it's an epidemic because it impacts the majority of people.
Right. That's what was really astonishing to really highlight today is that, you know, everyone's been impacted. Most people have been impacted in one way or another. But we're still not talking about it enough.
And regarding the statistics, on the LGBT Center website, they address that lifetime prevalence of rape, physical violence, and or stalking by an intimate partner was, well, let's just say for women who identify as lesbians, it's 43.8%. Bisexual women, 61.1%. Heterosexual women, 35%. Wow. So right now, the highest percentage falls within the bisexual community, which I'm pretty sure no one's talking about.
No.
Right?
No.
The fact that they
even
have these numbers is what we're I'm thankful that they were able to collect this kind of data. For men, for gay men, it's 26%. Bisexual men, it's 37%. And heterosexual, it's 29%. So again, bisexual men are the highest percentage for victims.
Wow.
So can you speak to that?
Well, I think that we're looking at, I mean, there's so much biphobia.
Right.
You know,
can you say biphobia?
Right.
But also the element around toxic masculinity.
And that's what I was about to say. And then again, because the statistics do show that, you know, the highest rates are men to women.
Yeah, 95% of assaults on spouses or ex-spouses are committed by men against women.
Right. So then you go.
Wonder if those bisexual percentages is a reflection
of men to women
heterosexual dynamics,
right? Or of and for bisexual men, would it be the men to men,
right?
But listen, women can get violent, and I actually was in a relationship with a woman, and it got violent on a couple of occasions. That was really scary. And it's not something I talk about much now that I think about it. So it does happen. And I have also had intimate partner violence with my first boyfriend in college. And that was back in the day when I was out as bisexual and I had a boyfriend in college. And that was a very abusive relationship. All of it was around alcohol. It never happened without alcohol. I was also deeply in my addiction, but
I mean,
you know,
survivors,
I don't know how my, I don't know if they're putting the statistics about alcohol in here.
Sure.
Or what have
well, there's
you.
A lot. This is very general.
This is very general, which we want to say.
Down.
Yeah. But I do know that it was, the denial was unbelievable on my part. And the denial of my friends was pretty unbelievable. It's just kind of like, let's just ignore that just happened. Let's just pretend that didn't happen.
Which just enables the situation.
Yeah.
Because it seems like in that friend group, they became kind of paralyzed or frozen.
Yeah, not knowing what to do.
Not knowing.
Yeah.
And
and there was nothing in college like call this hotline. Not that I would have, because I was so deep in it.
In the denial.
I was just like, so I have the personal experience. I've worked with a lot of folks that were in this situation as well as a psychologist and, you know, getting them the help, finding safe houses and, you know, doing all of that.
It's interesting because you and I also mentioned folks who are very successful, how they also tend to hide their pain, their suffering. If they're going through something like this, they compartmentalize that part.
Yes.
They cope in various ways. And we talked about how success is the warmest place to hide.
Yes.
To avoid really taking a look and addressing abuse that's happening in our lives.
Mm-hmm. And I think also when we say domestic violence, people also just think of the real physical acts, which is a very serious problem. And we know now, you know, the statistics of someone being killed are very high. But this is also psychological. There's also psychological abuse. And it runs in the same cycle. There's like of the cycle of abuse. You know, there'll be the tension building with the partner. Then
I call it psychological warfare.
Yeah, psychological warfare. And then there'll be the part where it gets really bad. They're just screaming at you and they're calling you horrible things or, you know, just going after you. And then there'll be the that will, in this cycle of abuse piece, once they've either gotten physical or gotten really emotionally abusive, that deflates this balloon of tension inside of the perpetrator. And that's when they're able to go into the honeymoon period, because then they might feel remorse, they might feel fear of losing you, all of that kind of stuff. And then they'll go into, you know, all kinds of ways to apologize, say it'll never happen again, you know, buy you things, whatever it is that they do. And this is why it can be so confusing.
You know, I'm so glad you mentioned that, because this actually takes, this is a perfect segue to our tools and resources.
Yes. Good.
And we want to just touch briefly on ways, just a few ways that you, that can help you identify if you're in an abusive relationship, and really just make that empowered choice to get out of it. And trust that part of this, part of being in that cycle of abuse, there's a lot of gaslighting that's going on by the abuser or perpetrator. So just keep that in the back of your mind that it is real, regardless of how they're denying it. So there's only just a few items here. So one, your partner has hit you, beat you, or strangled you in the past. Two, your partner is possessive. They check up on you constantly, wondering where you are. They get mad at you for hanging out with certain people if you don't do what they say. Three, your partner is jealous. A small, and it says in parentheses, a small amount of jealousy is normal and healthy. However, if they accuse you of being unfaithful or isolate you from family or friends, that means the jealousy has gone too far. They have crossed a boundary, folks.
Yeah.
And so yeah, that, just listen to that. Let that sink in. I know that's probably hard to hear, but a lot of people do it.
A lot. And this isolation is huge. And you don't, and it can happen slowly, so you don't realize that it's happening until suddenly, like, you're not contacting any of your friends.
You have no friends suddenly. You're not seeing your friend group, your peer group. They have to be your absolute number one.
It.
And yeah, they have to be consuming all your attention.
Yeah. So other ones to look out for are your partner puts you down. They attack your intelligence, your looks, your mental health, or your capabilities. They blame you for all their violent outbursts and tell you nobody else will want you if you leave. So this is the psychological warfare you were talking about, right, Alana?
Yep.
It's right there. They threaten you or your family. Or they physically and sexually abuse you. If they have ever pushed or shoved or hit you or made you have sex with them when you didn't want to, they are abusing you, even if it doesn't happen all the time. And I think that's what we want to underline. Even if it's just periodic.
Yep. Regardless, whether it's consistent or occasional, if it's happening, it's still happening.
Yeah.
It's still a red flag. Identify it as a red flag. And we definitely want to offer you the National Domestic Violence Hotline, which is 1-800-799-7233. Please, please, please call this number. And if need be, if this applies to you, if it resonates with you, or help out a person that you know that might be experiencing it.
Exactly.
If you see the red flags in others, in other relationships, don't hesitate to call the number yourself and get the tools you need to support this person. But just remember, as you know, Renee mentioned earlier, that it is a delicate situation. It might take some time, and to be resilient in really being a support system for that person.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And to not give up too easily, but also not, you know, become codependent and trying to fix it.
Like, right.
You
be
know,
mindful, but
mindful,
also know.
Have boundaries, do what you can, you know.
It's not just so easy for people to walk away. Mm-mm. And that it, you know, but knowing that you're there and you're continuing to remind that person that you're there for them is huge.
Yes.
And that is that small piece right there. So they know that they can trust you. They feel safe. That's a big piece.
You're not judging.
No judgment.
Right. And you're not going to lecture them. They're going to ask you, or you'll ask your friend, how can I help?
and really kind of leave it at that, right? So you've got some other tools here, Lana.
Yeah, there's so many tools, but we're going to share them on our with our episode. So at the bottom of our link here, you'll have a ton of resources to check out on your own, on your own time. But we're going to wrap it up here.
Yeah, and also on there is going to be the cycle of abuse diagram, which I find is really important to read as a also helpful tool to understand what's really going on, because it's a visual. So for folks that are really visual, it's like, oh, okay, this is what it is. This is what I'm caught in. So that'll be on the bottom of the podcast too. So thank you. This is
fantastic.
Fantastic. I know. So glad that we're talking about this and had this in our October segments.
Yes. And thank you to our guests again.
And if you like this, if you like our podcast, you feel inspired, please rate us, review us,
subscribe,
share it with your friends, reach out to us,
and if there's content, right?
Yeah,
if you want to hear,
yes,
that you want us to discuss,
yes,
we would love feedback.
Yeah, we'd love feedback, and yeah, share it to people that you think might be helped by it.
Yes, please share this episode with anyone you think might be experiencing some level of intimate partner violence.
So much love to everyone, and we'll see you next time.
Yes, so much love. Absolutely. Yes, till next time.
Till next time.
Bye, Lauren.
Bye, Alana.
The Consciousness Salon is owned, operated, and produced by Alana Roche and Dr. Lauren. Music is produced by DJ Roche and edited by Tyler Hood.
We would love to hear from you. There are a number of ways to contact us. My website is www.drlaurencostine.com. That is DrLaurenCostine. And I have a Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram page.
You can reach me at www.alanaroshay.com. That's AlanaRoshay. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter as well. This podcast represents the opinions of Dr. Lauren Costine and Alana Roche and their guests on the show. The content here should not be taken as medical advice. It is for informational purposes only, and because each person is so unique, please consult your healthcare professional for any medical or mental health questions. Thank you.